Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
This is unprecedented, and the state of Alaska and the health officials, we are very concerned.
State health officials are changing the way they fight drug overdoses. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 10th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, how Alaska's wildland firefighters are preparing for the upcoming season.
If you look historically at our most devastating fires are in the urban interface, and they have been human caused. So these are all fires that in theory should be preventable.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers an education as an adventure in living and learning. Students are the core of APU, representing the aspirations and collective wisdom of our community. Education is collaborative, innovative, and transformational, encouraging student development and honoring Alaska's Indigenous heritage while offering a unique and powerful educational experience. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The Upper Kuskokwim River communities of Sleep Mute and Red Devil have both reported local disaster emergencies following Sunday's flood damage. The water has since receded, and the National Weather Service has ended its flood warning for the Kuskokwim River. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports on the damage.
Tim Andrinoff lives in Sleep Mute. He remembers the water rising fast, flooding his yard around 8 a.m. Sunday morning.
Then all of a sudden the water was just coming in so quick. I had no time to move anything.
The water swamped 3 snow machines and a Yamaha boat motor. He said he had placed them beyond the usual flood point, but the water rose above that level.
I can probably fix them. It'll probably take about a week. More.
That is, depending on his ability to get parts. The water did not reach his house, but others were not so lucky. The State Emergency Operations Center reports that flood water inundated at least 5 homes in Sleep Mute. Outside other homes, the water damaged insulation, freezers, and vehicles. Also damaged are roads, the dump, the cemetery, and tribal equipment. Downriver, in Red Devil, the state reports that floodwaters damaged 2 roads, the runway, inundated a home, and contaminated water wells. Teresa Morgan says the flooding has turned her home in Red Devil into an island after the water washed out a nearby road.
Once all this is all over and the danger is gone, we have to go back and forth with a boat to go post office.
The State Emergency Operations Center says it is coordinating flood response with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation and the Association of Village Council Presidents. It says the Red Cross is coordinating with community leaders in Sleep Mute to provide flood assistance. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A group of law professors is critical of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for a split ruling in March that cleared the way for a land swap to create a life-saving road through a national wildlife refuge in Alaska. KNBA's Trip Krause has more on the legal battle over the swap.
In March, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 in favor of allowing a road between King Cove and Cold Bay. If approved, the road would cut across the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge on the Alaska Peninsula. But a group of 25 law professors joined environmental advocates and filed an amicus brief in a lawsuit opposing the road. During the Trump administration, Interior Secretaries reversed a 2013 agency decision from the Obama administration to deny the road. The brief outlines policy and regulatory concerns about that reversal. The law professors say that the Trump administration secretaries did little to prove a need for the road to reverse previous agency policies. They also say the swap violates environmental laws and the Alaska National Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA. The professors, who represent institutions from across the lower 48, seek an en banc or full court ruling on the decision to allow the land exchange. Environmental advocates say that a ruling in favor of the road would create a cascade of regulation issues on so-called national public lands. In Anchorage, I'm Trip J. Krause.
A A synthetic opiate called fentanyl is behind a surge of drug overdoses in Alaska. And as KTOO's Claire Strempel reports, overdoses in the state have become so deadly that one of the tools used to fight them has changed.
Naloxone is an overdose-reversing drug that's found in opioid emergency kits distributed by the state.
This is the box that will save lives, yeah.
Luke Roman is unpacking a battered cardboard box filled with the new kits at the Glory Hall, Juneau's homeless shelter. And for the last several weeks, they've been short on what people casually call Narcan kits. Narcan's the brand of naloxone.
All right, here they are.
But this is a new brand of naloxone called Kluxado.
Yeah, opioid, yeah. And I think this is the higher milligram, right?
It has twice as much naloxone in each dose.
It's 8 milligrams, yeah. Is that double? Yeah. Dang, yeah. So here it is. It comes with 2, so like 4 of the old ones, which is good because it is taking like more than one for people, you know?
If you haven't seen naloxone before, it looks kind of like that allergy spray that goes up your nose. Except instead of reducing sinus inflammation, this blocks or reverses the effects of opioids. Roman says, now that fentanyl is in most of the drugs around here, it takes a lot more to bring people back from an overdose. And they're seeing the effects at the shelter.
Personal on-the-ground experience here. Let's say I've worked at the Glory Hall for 2.5 years. And in the last year, I've seen 300% more overdoses. Yeah, none of them deadly, thank God. But yeah, just a lot more overdoses.
Fentanyl is more deadly than heroin because it's a lot stronger and in really tiny doses. It exists because there are medical applications for fentanyl, where those tiny doses are closely monitored. But it's really dangerous on the street, where there's no oversight. Getting that increased dosage of naloxone is part of why these emergency kits were so scarce for a while, and not just in Juneau, but across the state. Carol Fink oversees the state's supply of free naloxone through a program called Project Hope.
Probably about mid-February, we were being cautious with the amount of naloxone we sent out to our partners. And we ran out probably in early March.
She said finding a higher dosage of naloxone meant the state had to renegotiate with vendors. And that took time.
We also didn't realize how quickly we were going to run out because there was a surge of opioid deaths in the Mat-Su area, and that really brought attention to the issue.
That meant there was an increase in demand for the kits. But Fink says the new shipment of naloxone arrived earlier this month, and the program packed up thousands of new kits to distribute across the state. They're needed. Nearly 300 Alaskans died of an opioid overdose last year, and most of those deaths involved fentanyl.
From a public health perspective, this is unprecedented, and the state of Alaska and the health officials, we are very concerned.
It's not slowing down either. The state's drug task force seized twice as many grams of fentanyl in the first 3 months of this year than it did in all of 2021. And to be clear, the shortage was just of that free naloxone through Project Hope. People could still get the drug with a prescription. Dolores Van Borgendien works at an addiction treatment clinic in Juneau. She traces the explosion of fentanyl in Alaska back to about a year ago. Over the course of 2 weeks last April, the number of her patients with fentanyl in their urine went from 2% to nearly 14%. She says now it's more than half.
What we're seeing on the street, what we're seeing in our toxicology, what we're hearing from our patients, okay, preempts anything that comes out kind of publicly, you know?
She says naloxone and efforts like recent drug busts across the state help slow deaths down, but the pace is relentless.
You just feel every single day. I think everybody's who's involved in this, you just feel as if you're paddling upstream. You're not making any headway.
Naloxone is only a short-term fix to the most acute symptom of addiction. It gives people like Van Borgendien time to connect people who use drugs to the other resources they need for long-term recovery, things like treatment, housing, and access to mental health care. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage high schoolers celebrate graduation and their culture.
We've been through a lot these past few years, and just being able to show my heritage has been a great opportunity, and I'm glad to show it with pride.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
A group of Alaska Native tribes, communities, and village corporations has won a $35 million infrastructure grant to provide broadband to their constituents. But unlike traditional infrastructure projects involving steel or concrete, this federal grant is aimed at equipping homes and rural health facilities with the devices needed to take advantage of broadband. Nicole Borromeo is Executive Vice President of the Alaska Federation of Natives, which organized the consortium to apply for the grant. She says the first step is to do a needs assessment of the participating organizations, which include tribal housing authorities and regional nonprofits.
After that, we are going to start to supply their tribal citizens, Native shareholders, low-income housing families, what have you, with bundled computer packages. And they'll be able to choose from a traditional desktop or maybe a laptop or finally a tablet, which is probably going to be more popular for school-age students.
Borromeo says the grant will also fund IT technicians and a training program so that the technicians can come from the communities they serve. The grant is part of the first wave of infrastructure projects coming to Alaska from the $1 trillion infrastructure bill President Biden signed into law last year. It's the largest grant awarded by the new Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program, which is part of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Alaska's wildland firefighters have been completing annual training and now, with help from a state grant, strategically cutting and removing trees, many of them standing, dry and dead, killed by spruce beetles. That hazardous fuels reduction comes as long-term forecasts signal a normal fire season to come, just a million acres burned or combined something between the size of Rhode Island and Delaware. Norm McDonald, the State Division of Forestry's Chief of Fire and Aviation, says the prep work cutting fire breaks is helpful and likely to save money in the long run. But McDonald says all it would take to go from an average fire season to a huge one is some hot, dry weather and a lightning strike or the careless burning of some brush or a campfire.
And if you look historically at our most devastating fires are in the urban interface, and they have been human caused. So these are all fires that in theory should be preventable. So I think just the awareness that anytime you do an activity that includes either burning or open flame in the wildland setting, just to use extreme caution, especially this time of year, May, as we have that dry grass and these windy conditions, it does not take much of a start for a fire to get out of control past where a homeowner can suppress it on their own. And those are our most expensive fires. Those are the most, take the most resources, so the most firefighters and aircraft. But we really ask people to use extreme caution, whether that's their typical Alaskan, you know, outdoor activities like camping and hunting. But, you know, when you're doing your land clearing, look at other options instead of burning in May and June when it's dry and windy. Save that burning for fall when we get our wetter conditions, or that first snow in October is something that we really try to encourage people to do.
Gotcha. Yeah. Nobody wants something getting away from them like that and causing damage to their neighborhood or anybody else.
No. And people are always surprised at how quickly they have a burn barrel or a small fire or a barbecue in the grass, and how quickly a fire starts to something that they can't control with what they have on site. And then the fire department shows up and the helicopters show up, and it's just every person that we go to with that is always says the same thing. I had no idea how quickly that fire could spread. And so just something to be aware of for anybody doing that type of activity this summer.
There's a lot there that you can't really control, like the weather or where lightning strikes and things like that. And you can get the word out about, you know, how residents should be behaving to be fire safe. But I guess there are a few things that you can do ahead of time to prepare. And one of those things is what you call hazardous fuels reduction, right? And I guess that's a big push this year, sounds like.
Yeah, and it's nothing new to the division. We've been doing fuels breaks and hazardous fuels reduction, you know, going back to the mid-90s. And that really started with the first beetle epidemic we had going back to, you know, 95, 96, that time frame. And so it's something we've used and have had success with. What's changed this year is we have, for the first time last year, we received state dollars. We've relied entirely on federal grants up until last year for fuels reduction. And with this administration, public safety is a big part of their push. And we received a $10 million capital improvement project just earmarked for fuels reduction. And so that gives us state funds to leverage more federal funds, which this year coming to us through the infrastructure bill. So we are really in a good place when it comes to actually funding for this work. And now building capacity to meet the requirements of that work is really where we're at now. But yeah, it's a really exciting time as far as opportunities to provide a better service and public safety and develop these fuel breaks around some of our critical infrastructure and communities.
Well, what are fire crews doing right now other than reducing fuels and cutting fire breaks? What are they doing to get ready for the coming fire season?
So the Division of Forestry crews are all where they come back starting about mid-April, and they do what we call our 80 hours or 2 weeks of training. And that's their physical fitness. That's their fire readiness. They're getting their gear up and ready. They're ready to go May 1st. So our crews are staffed. They're ready to respond. We have them pre-positioned around the state, including Kenai and the Mat-Su Valley. The Fairbanks crew is down in Kenai because they are, again, a couple weeks behind. So we have them pre-positioned to where they're available to do the most good in a short order. But while they're not assigned to fires, they're doing this fuels reduction work. So this is a really good preseason work, and that kind of is crossover training for a lot of the similar work they do when there's a wildland fire. And that's running chainsaws and doing the clearing those fire breaks is very similar to what it looks like on the fire line as it is when they're building a fuel break ahead of the fire. So they're engaged with that work, and they're ready and they're pre-positioned and ready to go should they be needed any place in the state.
That was Norm McDonald, Chief of Fire and Aviation for the Alaska Division of Forestry.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. NEA Alaska members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org and help NEA Alaska reach, teach, and inspire all Alaska students. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
When Junior Amavai was appointed as Anchorage's chief equity officer in October, he became the first Polynesian Alaskan to serve at the executive level in the city's government. Amavai grew up in Anchorage and credits his success to his community, as well as equity officials who mentored him in college. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more on how Amavai hopes to balance a building community and promoting equity in the state's largest city.
At the Mountain View Boys and Girls Club in Anchorage, Uluau Junior Amavai greets kids at the door.
Go ahead and walk in here. There's different companies, organizations, unions in there as well. Go ahead and engage with them.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
The club is hosting a job fair for teens age 14 and up. For Amavai, he sees it as a way to organize with the larger Anchorage community, especially in the low-income, high-diversity neighborhood he grew up in.
Price Street, right across from the Boys and Girls Club,
That's where we grew up.
Amavai is now 7 months into his job as Anchorage's chief equity officer. The position is fairly new. He's just the second person with the title, and the assembly confirmed the first last year. The job has been entrenched in controversy since Amavai's predecessor was fired by Mayor Dave Bronson. Amavai says he tries to separate himself from those political debates.
You know, the thing is that even though those kind of things happen, I was focused on what needed to be done in front of me, which was working for the people.
As chief equity officer, 36-year-old Amavai says he hopes to keep opportunities open for all of Anchorage's residents, just as key people have done for him throughout his life, so he could become the first in his family to graduate college.
So have I quit back then? Or have I not met that mentor? I could have never set that trend lineage for my family.
Amavai was born in American Samoa and lived in Washington State as a kid before an apartment fire left him, his parents, and his 12 siblings homeless. He says his dad learned of the permanent fund dividend, and that drew them to Anchorage. Growing up in the city, Amavai says his parents worked hard to keep the family fed, and he got in trouble a lot. He got kicked out of East High School and went to Palmer to live with his sister. High school football coaches there took notice.
And he's just this big old 6'3". At that time, I was a sophomore, it was 225 pounds, just like, coaches were like, what the heck, came from heaven? Like, a big old Samoan dude just came out of the woods. And that's where the coaches kind of brought me in.
Amavai went on to attend Western Washington University on a football scholarship. But he struggled with adjusting to the intense training schedule and with his grades, and at one point was put on academic probation. It was then that Amavai found a mentor in the university's equity advisor, Dr. Kunle Ojukwutu. Ojukwutu started by asking Amavai what his qualities were. Amavai spoke of his Samoan values of respect and family and being a leader on his football team.
All these things that are not academic, you know, and he was like, well, promise me that you'll take these experiences and utilize it to get you through college.
His academic probation was lifted, and Amavai went on to play briefly for the NFL. He later worked for the NFL's Players Association before moving back to Alaska to do community outreach for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Amavai was let go from the DEA in October during the COVID-19 pandemic because he wouldn't get vaccinated. Shortly after, he got hired by Mayor Bronson. His appointment came amid a fight between Bronson and the assembly over whether the mayor can fire the chief equity officer with no cause, as he did with Amavai's predecessor. Assembly Vice Chair Chris Constant says while he appreciates Amavai's community outreach, it's not really the job of the chief equity officer. Constant was one of the assembly members who approved the position, which he describes as a type of municipal auditor.
An officer within the municipality whose job it is to tell us the hard truths about where we're failing to meet on our equity efforts. It's not to go out and build community organization and help promote these communities.
A lawsuit between the assembly and mayor over the chief equity officer job is ongoing. Constant says he hopes the courts will make Amavai's job and his independence from the mayor's administration more clear. The assembly unanimously voted to confirm Amavai during an assembly meeting packed by dozens of members of the Anchorage Polynesian community, including Lucy Hansen, the director of the Polynesian Association of Alaska. She's known Amavai since he was a kid.
I've never thought that they would ever look at us Pacific Islands as an educated individuals or people to be able to sit at the executive seat, you know, so I'm grateful.
Amavai says he hopes to make the type of impact on others' lives that his college chief equity officer had on him.
Now you see the fruit of labor happen just because I chose to make that choice and because of people like the chief equity officer at the college. Who found a way that broke down some barriers that now I'm doing today in my work to be able to help this city.
He says he's also working with the city's affirmative action plans and coordinating with human resources to identify equity and hiring issues in the city. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Graduation ceremonies for the Anchorage School District continue this week. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas went to Bartlett High School's graduation ceremony last night and has this report.
More than 200 Bartlett High School seniors celebrated their graduation Monday night. They walked into the Alaska Airlines Center wearing blue caps and gowns with gold sashes and waved to family members in the stands. It marked the conclusion of a high school experience bookended by two major events. the 2018 earthquake, and the COVID pandemic. Valedictorian Lucy Atkinson spoke to her class.
Nearly every year here, we have faced some sort of uncontrollable worldly challenge.
Principal Sean Price said the pandemic required students to remain flexible amid changing health mandates.
You managed to demonstrate self-control as the rules of how to be in school changed daily.
Class speaker Caitlin Rose Chua praised her class's resilience and accomplishments.
Throughout the year, I've seen my peers create small businesses that are flourishing with support throughout the school. I've seen my peers win scholarship after scholarship to back up the big dreams they've had.
After the speeches, students received their diplomas and shook hands with Prince, Superintendent Dina Bishop, and each of the school's teachers. Ken Tate teaches students with physical and cognitive disabilities. Three of them graduated from Bartlett this year, and Tate sat with them during the ceremony. He says online learning was a challenge for both teachers and students.
We learned to do things that we didn't think we could do. We had to learn to teach ways that we didn't know we could teach. So it was difficult. But to see these guys finish that journey and to be accepted as part of the Bartlett family, part of the high school family, that's awesome.
Eight of the district's graduation ceremonies are being held at the Alaska Airlines Center. The pre-pandemic location, the Sullivan Arena, is currently being used as a homeless shelter. The district limited the number of tickets to 6 per student because of the smaller venue size. A few families waited outside the arena during the ceremony because there weren't enough tickets for all members to sit inside. They held banners with photos of their graduates and played music. Tusi Frost Brown was outside, ready to celebrate her twin nephews, Michael and Troy Ah-Ching. She says family members from Alaska and Hawaii wanted to show their support after a challenging 4 years.
It was a rough time, you know, with the pandemic and all this was going on, but we still have faith in them and encourage them that their life goes on. So I guess I was so proud of them and thank God for kids like them.
This year also brought changes to the district's cultural regalia policy. Previously, students were required to notify the district if they planned to wear cultural regalia. This year, that requirement was waived. Students could also wear headdresses instead of graduation caps. Jasmine Ross wore a Dena'ina Athabascan stole adorned with red and white beaded flowers.
It means a lot. It means a lot to my family as well. We've been through a lot these past few years, and just being able to show my heritage has been a great opportunity, and I'm glad to show it with pride.
After the ceremony, students greeted family members outside the arena, where they took photos, donned floral and candy leis, and popped confetti. Graduation ceremonies continue throughout the next 3 weeks. The ceremonies held at the Alaska Airlines Center will also be live-streamed on the district's YouTube page. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Trip Krause and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Claire Strimple in Juneau, and Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Parents, did you know that 1 out of 4 Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit LiveVapeFree at AlaskaQuitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.